If you enjoy this podcast, don't forget to subscribe to catch all future episodes. Also, check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/switchboxtv for video versions of this show, plus loads more videos covering sport, music, and lifestyle. That's youtube.com/switchboxtv. This episode was recorded in September 2020. Welcome to the Need to Know Music Show with me, Rona McManus, here on Switchbox TV. And today I'm joined by one of our greatest living songwriters and easily one of my top four brothers. you know him as Elvis Costello. How are you? How are you getting on?
I'm doing great, Ro. It's really good to see your face. It really does me good. I'm very pleased to hear I'm one of your top four brothers. I mean,
easily.
We both know that our Nana would at times remove the picture of one family member who was not in favor from on top of the piano. So you have to keep in good with the family, you know. Like, you went in favor. You knew whether you were good by whether you should have been removed from the piano.
Whether you'd been erased or not, yeah.
Yeah, she was kind of Stalinist in that way, you know.
She'd have done well in this day and age, I'd say.
She would have been a demon on social media. I know she would.
Last time we sort of spoke at length, really, I suppose, we spoke as lockdown was kind of happening. Your tour had been kind of cut short in the UK. You were quarantining in Vancouver at that point. So there was all very uncertain. We didn't know what was going to happen. So how have you found? I know you managed to reunite with Diana and the boys,
we were very fortunate to have a pretty remote place, which is a cabin on Vancouver Island, where we didn't see a soul. It was a little tight, you know, because it's the sort of place you go after a summer day where you come home at the end of the night nice and tired, and you're living in there, in particularly when the weather wasn't so good. But that's the reality most people are making, you know, on top of one another. Who's grabbing all of the internet? You know, you've got the complications of virtual schooling, and so it meant that Diana and I had to stay. Pardon me, we've got planes flying overhead here. They would come at this moment. We'd select our moments. But we were fortunate that while most of the parks and trails were closed, one remained open in our immediate neighborhood. And we were able to kind of get out for fresh air. We had access to supplies with all the usual kind of precautions, and you just get used to it. And people, you know, Canadian people tend to be quite, it's always wild to make generalizations, but they listened to what was being said. That which was being said was said for the most part very coherently, which wasn't the case.
Well, I'd say there's a, we haven't been so fortunate.
Every day at 4 o'clock or something, the medical officer would come on and speak in a very straightforward way. No mad theories. I didn't sense that that it was politicized in any way. It just seemed to be common sense. It wasn't always good news. It was some very sad news. People, as you well know, I lost a couple of friends in the early days, but they did have health problems. But then, you know full well because you went through it in the house. So that, you know what it means to get there. What you have to do, and this is, you know, you've got a wife who's working right in the thick of it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that must have been very frightening for the family, as well, most of all for the person who's got it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Chrissy's been sort of on the front line, but she also had it very early on, and I think knowing what we know now, if we'd known that then, I'd have been a lot more worried. I think I was guilty of being a little bit blasé of how dangerous this thing was. So, but we got through it, and there's been a lot of sadness around and everything. But it has given us sort of time, with the kids and kind of time.
So that's the thing. I realize I would probably have been out on the road this summer, and I'll be forever grateful for the for the reason to slow down and savor the time that we have together. It's very very difficult with regard to my mother, you know, who had her 93rd the other day, and the best we could manage was a cupcake and a candle on FaceTime, you know, and I can't just get on a plane and be there. And each time I speak to her, I can't really extend much hope that the immediate future brings a possibility for me to easily get there. For one thing, they might not let me back into the country here if I left. I landed here in Canada, and I don't have any other reason than I'm here already. I don't have a right to be here. You know, it to come right now would be a 5-week trip. It would be like getting on a boat in the old days, you know.
God, yeah, like Papa did.
Yeah, it'd be like Papa going away for, you know, so I'll see you in a month and a half, you know, because it would be to make, you know, you'd have to do, and I don't really understand how quarantining in a hotel is really quarantining, because you're not taking care of your own needs. You know, you'd have to get a fresh towel now and again and something to eat. So you're still in contact with people. So, you know, even the logic of it, and when you're thinking about an older person who is vulnerable, that's one of the main reasons to not be selfish and pay attention to the advice. It isn't necessarily your own health, which might be quite robust. But as we know, even some younger people can have conditions that, you know, it would be ill-advised for them to be exposed. Certainly older people don't do very well, which is why there have been so many fatalities in nursing homes, you know?
But you've been pretty busy with the musically. We've had two releases so far from this Helsinki sound.
Yeah.
So this is
the Helsinki sound. Well, that's what I wanted to give it a name because it was my, you know, my own work, so to speak. I didn't want to blame anybody else for that row. but I do enjoy going in and playing everything myself because, it, you know, obviously it's within my own limitations on certain instruments and making, I just took the attitude that everything in the band was a drum, you know, that like, I can't play the drums in a conventional way. So the accents are coming off guitars and organs and things like that. So if you treat everything like a drum, you can't really go wrong. For this kind,
I mean,
of
it's, anyway, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a contrast from Look Now. I mean, it was a surprise to hear something so different, and I think it was, it's really certainly seems to suit the world today. I think
this is a complete coincidence. He couldn't lay claim to it being decoding anything, and that's presumptuous at the best of times, but. It is a noise that the way I felt, and it was the way I felt, you know, back in February before any of this became apparent. So, I mean, some things were apparent before the pandemic, you know, but the first song, No Flag. is the mind of somebody who's reached the end of their tether, so to speak. Now that's not necessarily the way I feel every day, you know, but it's the place you get to more often than is comfortable. So that's that's what you represent. The second song is a tangled tale of a formerly powerful gossip columnist who now finds herself completely, you know, obsolete, I suppose, in a world in which, as the song says, everyone has a megaphone, you know, and that's kind of a satirical tale, you know, because it's obviously somebody who used to think of themselves as wielding power, and they really don't anymore, and that's kind of true, you know.
Yeah.
So it's got something to do with the way that we value opinion and truth now, but it isn't a big lecture. It's believe me, and compared to with everything else that I've recorded, that's the comedy number, you know.
So this you've sort of decided you made a decision to put them out as you called them, bulletins.
Yeah, well, the closest thing, because no factories are open pressing records, or if they are back open now. When we started, there were no pressing plants, so I understand that they are trying to put a 7-inch record on the streets of No Flag, even though we've released another song since then, because people like those things. They like those objects, and I'm glad they do. And I want records to still exist, accepting that, like for most people, music's a bucket of fish that you throw in the stream now, you know, and whether those fish are alive or dead or bait for something else is the question you ask. I mean, sometimes it is just bait for the bigger fish, you know. So I think that's a good way to look at it and not get too into this anxious debate about, oh, the world has changed. It's, I mean, my day, it was so much better. You know, I started out on an independent record label. I would go after work to Alexander Street, where Stiff Records was, and I would help put, I take the singles out of white bags that came in the factory, and a separate box would come with the picture sleeves, you know, which were very modest, really. And everybody that was at hand would be putting them in the sleeves and put them back in the boxes, and they would get delivered out to the independent record shops. Really was, it wasn't a cottage industry. It was a real load of old cobblers. It was like going to an old shop, you know, like the old shops, the Chandlers, where you buy candles, or cobblers where you could choose fix. That's what it felt like. It felt tangible. And I, of course, a lot of that, and that's not to be romantic about it or nostalgic in any way, because everything that's happened ever since has been what it's been. But I like that idea of the single song bulletin. So I wouldn't call them singles, because you can't physically buy them at the moment, except over the you know, download. And a lot of people listen to their music in what I would say is a sort of kind of determined radio. Isn't streaming like radio, where you determine the programming? You choose whether to listen to a playlist or a random shuffle of songs in a certain mood that you're in. In some ways, it's better than having to listen to, you know, DLT or blather on about, you know, his last adventures or whoever. Yeah. You know, I don't want to listen to those people. They were, to me, the handful of broadcasters that I really admire are just that, a handful. The rest were dilettantes and opportunists that wouldn't know one end of a good record from the other. So I'm not sorry that doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist in my world anyway. The people that are doing it honestly and with passion for the music, I still love them, and I'll always love them. But you've got to distinguish between the two things. You know, some of them are Wolfman Jack, the others are Jimmy Savile.
Yeah, well, that's good to say. A lot of the charlatans got found out in the worst way. So,
yeah, but they're not all a monster like him, thank God. But you know, it's not getting on a thing about that. You've probably got your favorite broadcaster somewhere. There's somebody trying to do it honestly, and you know, being an advocate isn't a bad thing. We all have favorite records. You want to be able. What do? You hear something, you tell your friends. So you know,
well, there's plenty of
the broadcasters do that. And you can also do that with a playlist. You can also do that with people writing online about some corner of music that they feel they've discovered or have some insight into, you know.
Well, I had this thing with one of my songs. I hadn't checked my Spotify, you know, the sort of like the behind the scenes stuff, you know, I hadn't checked that in so long. And then I checked back in, and one of my songs somehow had like 6,000 more plays than all the others, and it wasn't the one that I'd done the video for. It was a random song from the album, and I found out that I'd been included on a playlist, a user playlist, just a Spotify listener. I put it on a playlist, and it got all these listens. That's a really powerful thing. But then, it obviously, you know, you've got to lobby these people then, and that's a different manner to do that. You know,
that process there is just like the old mixtape. You know, that's the same thing as you would make a mixtape. Some people caught it on mixtape with mixtapes. You know, they caught their intended. You know, with this is the romantic songs I've compiled for you. You know, or something that just keeps you from doing something rash. You know, you have a bunch of songs that keep you in a place where you can function, whatever it is, whatever reason. I don't see any difference. I don't see what's anything sinister about the playlist. The only thing is that the idea that people make coherent or hopefully coherent statements or suggestions for the order in which things are to be heard. I still think that's in the gift of the artist to do that. But so many people are not even thinking in terms of albums. As you know, I still program things as a two-sided album in my mind, even if I know that fewer and fewer people will hear it that way. If it works, or if it's going to be pressed over four sides even, I try to think about how that sounds. I think for an awful lot of people, they are making single songs. So that's kind of what I did. I did these two songs, and I realized that they would stand out. It wouldn't sound like the last record. It would be a very distinct change of mood. It was the way I was feeling. It was the way it sounded when I did it. And what's the matter with that? That's what we were all trying to do. Do something that's real to us and hope that somebody else likes it.
Well, I think the timing of it, I mean, with everything that's happened this year was just, it just, there was a marked different world we were living in. And for it to be a marked different sound, I think it really fitted, you know. Yeah. It was really great.
Well, thank you. But, you know, Look Now was a beautiful record to make. And I was very proud of the band. Everybody played with a kind of degree of control that allowed the space for the next statement to be made. Obviously, the approach of the Helsinki sound is me in there with a, you know, box of tricks, you know, a box of tools, a jazz master, a 1950s rhythm ace, singing the rhythm part into my phone. I said, well, I want the drums to sound like this. And I go, well, why can't they just be that? Instead of saying, I want it to be like this. Well, it just is this. Start with that, you know, rather than painstakingly programming every accent on it. It felt much more alive, if not live. And then you perform, there's some element of performance. Piano is performed, singing is performed, obviously. And then you have something, you know, you're playing, going for a particular sound on the guitar that I want to hear, that's kind of fuzzed up and jagged. And that felt right for those songs. Something else might be different, you know.
We touched on Look Now. We've got to mention the Grammy.
You know, all of these things, it's across, I don't know whether you know the Christopher Guest film, Best in Show. You know, I felt like we were the, you know, Kerry Blues that were let into the ring of show poodles, you know. I mean, it seems so odd. For one thing, we, for some reason, got into traditional pop music category.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what is traditional pop?
Well, it's basically whatever they say it is now, because it used to be, yeah. It used to be the award they gave to Tony Bennett whenever he put a record out, because he'd be one of the few exponents of what they saw of as singing the songs from a traditional form of songwriting, which is basically meant what we call, usually call standards or great American songbook songs. But they decided to broaden it out. Well, so we ended up in a category with the Barbra Streisand record, which had a combination of standards and some political songs she'd written, a John Legend Christmas record, I mean, an Andrea Bocelli record, so you kind of know the kind of thing he does. In some ways, I think that you could say our record represented a kind of pop music. It had references to things that I love, like Philly Soul and the songs I wrote with Burt Bacharach and Carole King. Obviously,
they're not
a traditional form of songwriting. I don't know what is. It's got 60 years or more of lineage, you know, not my writing, but theirs. So in any case, I didn't think for a minute they would read our name out. We went along anyway for a laugh and ended up, next thing, we were up there in the spotlight, and it was kind of comical.
Now, well, not all of you.
No. Here's what makes it perfect is that they sent Steve's invitation to the wrong address. So Steve was actually doing a gig in Los Angeles and was on the plane when we discovered that they had sent his invitation to the wrong address. So they're right there. That's how seriously you have to take it, you know, because you can't afford to trust them to do it right. And it seemed at first as if only I'd been invited, because I don't know why. But you know, there's a lot of very important executives that have to get the good seat. So, you know, just because you've been nominated doesn't mean anything. We went along, Sebastian, our producer, came with us, Pete, Davey and me. We just had a laugh. We just went along and, you know, the next thing we were discussing, Jam Roly Poly with the BBC correspondent, because we were about to do a tour, and Pete's telling that we like being in England because we get good suppers, you know. I don't know why he told her that. She looked at him when he said Jam Roly Poly, and I couldn't resist adding Spotted Dick, and then I think for a moment she thought, is this a meeting? You know, like, we were just riffing on nursery. You know, we weren't saying anything rude, like, but... the whole thing was bizarre, but you know, you run into some people. Anderson Paak was in the green room. I like his work. There were a few people we ran into, and then Sebastian and I tried to get our seat, and it was so complicated just getting to your seat that I gave up in the end and went home and watched the rest of it on television. I couldn't.
Oh,
I actually didn't see the show because we weren't in the part that's televised. Because traditional pop, like, it's like what we call the fairyland creatures categories. You know, it's out there with the jazz and the gospel and the bluegrass and the, you know, it's not prime time. You know, So I thought, I don't love this that much. I'll just go home now.
So the I want to tell
you all the fun at this fair that we can. You know, we're sick of cats.
And there's no Jam Roly Poly, so we're going.
There's no Jam Roly or Spotted Dick. No. Or a pudding.
I did want to ask you about the animation, because I thought that was fascinating. We had a brief chat on email about it, and I thought it was brilliant. You've been doing all the animating of the videos yourself, and
I haven't done the animation. And the backdrop. But we started out. I did a couple that I just. They were kind of, you couldn't call them animated. They were really just still frame montages. Obviously inside, you know, iMovie on a Mac, you can do a degree of transition. You know, that it comes with certain transitions, and you can travel within frames and do like a rostrum effect. So you can put a limited amount of movement into it. And I did a couple of, clips for Look Now songs, which when I look at them now, they look very primitive, but at least they were my own work. They, you know, again, I wasn't really looking. The days of hiring, you know, a yacht and sailing, you know, the waters off Sri Lanka and like Duran Duran or something, you know, were long gone. You know, those years when the mid-year would be wandering the streets of Vienna recreating The Third Man, or for that matter, many of our own videos, which were...
I was going to say, even running into the water in Hawaii, we're holding a ukulele. Well,
comparison, that was very ramshackle and you know, the Oliver's Army video mainly consisted of us arriving in Honolulu and researching some night spots in which we might film until about 3 in the morning, and then being woken up about 4 hours later to go and film on the beach. So I think I was trying to dive into those waves to get rid of my hangover, you know. It's like, but we, you know, most of the early videos were just involved as being filled full of vodka and shoved in a white room and jump around until you run out of steam. There wasn't much story. Then we did make a few of those acting out videos, but they were mostly done very tongue in cheek. It did get progressively more absurd. And obviously once MTV was, hungry for more and more shiny things, those people who could do that well, people who could dance well, people who had good visual ideas or simply looked good on camera, or found somebody who looked good on camera to stand in their video, you know, you know, prevailed. So this sort of scribbling on things, and of course, since the record companies claimed to run out of money, they switched over to this lyric video notion, which is basically like follow the bouncing ball in the old, you know, the old vaudeville idea.
Yeah.
Really a version of that. And it's done with different degrees of invention. Sometimes you see one that creates an atmosphere around the song that is really good. I started to do them, as I said, with a montage. And then before we did our run last summer with Blondie, on a bill with Blondie, they have a big audio visual, big visual dimension behind them.
I thought, well, we can't go onto a blank screen. So I did these things, and I got in touch with this fellow called Paul Guthrie, who goes by the nickname Arlo, and he, an Aussie who lives in Minneapolis, and he and I seemed to hit it off. And we did the backdrop montages. As you know, they range from very abstract kind of squiggles and daubs to pictures of our grandfather, Pat, and my maternal grandfather, Jim Ablett, you know, which I put into the context of peace, love, and understanding, which was, a lot of people commented that you know, they liked the seeing that because it made it apparent that a song that we'd sung for 40, and this is the way I felt about it anyway, a song that's sung for 40 years has a personal implication if you put a member of your family in the narrative, even if it's there's a context of something going on behind you. You don't expect people to make note of every image going on behind you.
I thought that was really powerful.
It felt really powerful. It had some, you know, it wasn't just a bunch of, you know, pretty pictures. And so that as we moved on, the later video for Look Now was done by a video artist and did a good job, but I still felt like I liked the idea of it coming from me. Not because I think I'm any great shakes as a cartoonist or whatever you call this thing, but I do see the pictures the way I do. And I found a way to create images that I piled them up. And with Arlo, we seemed to strike a good rhythm. I could send him a group of images and say, I think this is the first verse. Put this and combine, you know, in No Flag, I wrote the words out, the Hedy O'Hara, the words appear typeset across some of the images. And we have another song coming out a couple of weeks from now, where I think the balance between the images and the words is the best yet. So it's really been a pleasure to work with him, because although they are handmade, homemade, once he gets to work on it, he finds like little elements inside some of my pictures, and then he animates elements of my illustrations. There's a technique by which he can grab a flower and have the petals fall off it or something like that, you know. Some sort of way creates movement as opposed to just cutting from frame to frame. So it's not like an animated cartoon. You know anything about animation. That's thousands and thousands of minutely different images, most of the time these days, not generated by an artist with a pen, but with a computer. But that doesn't mean that it isn't at a high level of art, or stop motion, which is a fascinating form of animation, you know, which I really love, that Wes Anderson uses and the Leica films use, which are great favorites in this house. I would love to do something like that, but that's a much bigger undertaking. These are things that are done just to get the word out, some sense of the song, some mood. And I think the No Flag video, it seemed to catch people's eye. That's good. Yeah.
Well, I think people kind of, I know a lot of people came to me, and the view, what they loved was it kind of harked back to that DIY early years, that I think it really kind of echoed a lot of the early sort of stiff stuff. And I think people liked that.
Consciously think it was connecting to that, but I can, as I said, I feel as if the whole approach to recording now and putting records out and single bulletins in the short term is something that is recognizable to me. I don't feel inhibited because that's what we're doing, because it's what I knew originally. I, for the most part, disagreed with the choices of singles released from our records beyond the most obvious choices early on. Up for the first two or three, four records, the singles chose themselves. After that, I was nearly always in disagreement with the American record company about which song they should release. In almost every example, they released the wrong song and it didn't have the impact they claimed it would. And I always feel, well, you might as well have gone with my choice. At least it was the one I felt strongly about, you know?
Yeah.
So now
you're doing that.
Into that trap, you know, it's all this nonsense about, you got to get, because that one's going to play. And then once radio became highly formatted, which we see less of in the UK, but is really paralyzed the creative impulse in radio. In America, became highly formatted in the 80s. And the programming was no longer done by the people playing, talking on the air, or the program director. It was mostly done off-site by a consultant, like a Moneyball approach to music. And we know how good that's been for sport. You know, it sort of elevates a sort of analysis of statistics rather than the instinct that a player has a great talent, you know, which sometimes can't be calculated in numbers. Same with music. It's extremely difficult to calculate people's worth based just on their sales or the number of plays they get in this format. Yes, you can. Well, that's about investment. That's like playing the stock market. It's nothing to do with the creative impulse.
Well, what I was going to ask you is, what do you think this technology of doing your own animation, you know, your own videos and that, would that have been a good idea to give that technology to a young Elvis Costello?
I couldn't have imagined it because we didn't, you know, we didn't have that. You know, you have to remember events in your life where you go, and then I called. You come to the end of this anecdote and you go, and then I called him or her. And you go, that means that you went to the telephone in your house and picked it up and dialed it with a rotary dialer, or you went to the, you know, to the phone box. You didn't pull something out of your pocket. So the news,
yeah.
I saw it on the news, which means it, at 6 o'clock or at 9 o'clock, you saw it on the news at specific time. It's not that long ago. It's not that long ago. We've got very used to the fact, I've got to call him, I'll do it now. Or you send a text. The news, I want to know what's happening. Even if it's invented, even if it's a sort of, you know, something which is being amplified by its repetition, you can see it all the time. So I don't think you can compare what we live in now to what I started in. I mean, the Beatles records were put out on 78s in India and some other territories. They caught the very in 1962, 63, the Beatles records were still being pressed in some parts of the world on 78 shellac records, because that technology had not been overtaken by vinyl. I obviously caught the back end of the vinyl era, and I remember them coming to me. I remember my record company, who distributed the albums in the mid 80s, giving me a gift of this very expensive new device, which was a CD player. That's very nice, except I don't have any of these discs, so I can't use it, you know? And then they started appearing and they told us, well, we're going to have to pay you less on those CDs because they're so expensive to produce, which we now know to be an utter lie, because you know, you buy a big stack of them for 10 bucks, you know? So all of that stuff, each time there's an innovation in technology, there's something lost and something gained. I mean, everybody said these CDs, they're indestructible. No, they're not. They sound better. No, they don't. That's demonstrable, you know. Tape compression has a certain warmth. So now people that create guitar pedals and things spend a lot of time trying to model pedals to mimic analog warmth, tape compression. The same with plugins for your computer recording. You can go to Abbey Road and download all of the plates and everything. If you want to do that, if you want to feel as if you're in the environment of a Studio 2 at Abbey Road, you can do that now. It's a little bit of money to do it, but this is where we've got to, where there's the acknowledgement that the technology has not advanced beyond the only way in which it's advanced is our ability to do as we are doing now, talking over thousands of miles on a video link, and therefore to be able to record and transmit music to one another. But there's good and bad to that, isn't there, as well? Because it becomes valueless. People assume it should be free. Even if they are prepared to pay for it, the people who annex the control of distributing it have not been straight with the artists. They have said this, they've run that CD scam again. this internet thing is so expensive that we can't possibly pay you what we should be paying you. We'll pay you nothing. You know, it's taken 10 years to get Spotify's arm up their back to pay what a fraction of what they should have been paying. They've been running their business off everybody's output. So has YouTube. So have all these basically ideas for corporations have become reality. They've willed them in, and everybody has subscribed to it to the degree that they're, or not just music, but everything, their pictures, their ideas, their writing, their personal information is currency. And it has a financial worth, a massive financial worth that's been perceived by a few people who are basically rogue traders.